Hello and welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. This is the format where we're introducing you to mobility pioneers who are shaping our future. If you are keeping count, this is episode 7, and we're excited because it's our first episode of a new year. Our topic this week is the future of automotive software. And here to break it down for us, I've got someone who's working on the cutting edge of the industry. He's the Chief Software Officer at Mercedes-Benz. I'm pleased to welcome Magnus Östberg. Magnus, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Glad to be here. So software in automotive is, of course, not a new thing. It's been around for a while, but what is different here is what we call software-defined vehicles. So software-defined vehicles is a term, it's a trend that has been used in the industry for quite some time now, but there are lots of different definitions of it. And I'm not going to go into a lecture of this, but what we're talking about in Mercedes-Benz terms of software-defined vehicle is that we are breaking from a situation from the past where the vehicle was, when you bought it, an object that was very static. It was a beautiful object, a beautiful, nice Mercedes-Benz S-Class or whatever you liked, but it didn't change over time. The second owner, the third owner, and also you as the primary owner had this vehicle and stayed the same over time. What we have experienced, of course, in the digital domain or the consumer world is you used to be able to change or modify your digital experience with the product over time. You want to be able to have your configuration, your music, your digital content, your apps, and have that in your product. Now, moving over then to the Mercedes-Benz or the automotive world, this means that we are separating hardware from software. And to do that, we need to have a new fundamental architecture. We call this architecture at Mercedes-Benz, Mercedes-Benz Operating System. And this is a software-defined vehicle architecture that has as its aim to bring a dynamic range of content to you as the customer user who loves Mercedes-Benz, so that on the one side, you continue to love and care for the physical, beautiful object that is so beloved and cherished, but that you can at the same time add to that experience a dynamic digital experience. And that's what we are doing. People sometimes confuse this with what is called a mobile phone on wheels, because a mobile phone has a lot of apps and contents in it, but it's only one small area of a Mercedes-Benz. This area usually is called something like telematics or infotainment, different words in the industry. So yes, of course, a piece of Mercedes-Benz operating system is exactly this domain, this area, which you can relate to a mobile phone. But it's so much more than that. We're talking also about the entire vehicles, how it's driving dynamics, how it's range when you have an electric vehicle, what is the range that you want to drive, what is the charging capacity, what is the charging speed, the adoptions of different charging technologies, so that you as a driver can have trust in this entire digital ecosystem that you have around you. Of course, a lot of attention is on the apps or the infotainment. Let me just start off and saying that this was the first area that Mercedes-Benz really invested heavily in to give its customer more content. This started already back in 2018, where Mercedes-Benz launched the MBUX. Just last year, we launched what we call our first generation or our preview of MBUX in the infotainment domain in the E-Class. And this E-Class now has received reward after reward just because of the fact that it is giving exactly this configurable experience in the domain of infotainment, where we are giving a completely different experience to our customers in China, compared to the customers in Japan, compared to customers in US and here in Germany. And that is a primary example of the flexibility we can offer our customers when we use software-defined techniques to be able to tailor this experience. And that is what we
have this vision, which we called hyper-personalization, where we use techniques like large language models and other machine learning models in order to take the data input from all of the sensors, meaning the cameras, the sensors, the internal cabin information, in order to see, are you having a good time? Are you actually wanting to interact with functional A or functional B? When you're doing it, are you pleased? Did we actually fulfill your services? And with the help of generative models, we have been able to learn so much about, for example, how the voice interaction can change dramatically. We were the first one to put ChatGPT in a beta program for about 100,000 customers in the US. And just in December, we launched now conversational knowledge based on similar technologies to 2.5 million of our customers in Europe and in the US. And that is exactly some of the examples of how you can actually change the experience. You can turn on functionalities, give functionalities to existing customers through our connected platform. We can then give a digital experience to our customers and let them use the apps. But the trick for us, since we are not any car brand, we're Mercedes-Benz. It's the best of nothing. Our ambition is to really give the customers the most comfortable, safest, and luxurious environment around it. How can we move beyond having just a digital experience to something that is really fully immersed and integrated to the rest of the beautiful environment? And that goes from the finishing of the letters to when you close the door, you really feel that it is a Mercedes. And that's the kind of elevation we want to do. And I'm sure there's tons of questions and opinions about how to do that. But one of the examples would be, for example, when we put some digital content in the car, it's not just about the app. It's about how do we elevate that with the premium speaker system, meaning using Dolby Atmos as an example that we showcased and then put now out in series, how that really can have a completely immersive experience. So it's actually much better than an experience you would get if you have just a personal device in your hand or a standard plugin system. So I hope that gives a little bit of a framework that we're not just talking about a mobile device on wheels. We're talking about multiple domains, including automated driving, and we're talking about separating hardware from software and making it dynamic.
Magnus, you talked about the hyper-personalization of experiences. I'm curious how you're working with AI to drive this vision forward. Can you say a bit more about that?
I would say the two best examples I have is regarding the interaction with the system. In the past, we had to memorize what you could say to a device, what you could say to a car, and you need to say it in the right order. With AI and the models that is now coming out, regarding if you're using Gemini or if you're using Llama or if you're using ChatGPT or even other open source models, what it gives us is an opportunity to interact with the system, with the device, with the Mercedes-Benz car in a natural way. I can talk to it like I talk to you. And through that context that we can have in the discussion, we can then derive what is your intention, what context were you talking about, and therefore then derive a more personalized experience. It doesn't need to be a cookie cutter experience that you have to memorize. It's actually is adapting to you and in what context you are.
That's so interesting. I'm curious, you know, when we're thinking about this, you said it's not like a phone on wheels. What you're describing to me, Magnus, sounds almost like a butler. And I'm wondering if you see the potential to integrate MBOS with broader ecosystem, things like smart homes or external mobility services.
The possibilities are endless. Absolutely. You can think of going outside and connecting it to that. And that's the beauty also when we look at the new architectures coming up here with the AI models, that we can then tie in agents who then fulfill certain activities for us. What is interesting, though, is to really understand what is actually desirable from the customer's perspective. Mm-hmm. And this is the learning journey that we're going through right now. I can just give you an anecdote from the beta study we did in the US, where we then placed in, at that point of time, it was ChatGPT-3 that we plugged into our system, and then see what actually does the customer want to do, and what are they doing with it. And the interesting thing is that the top ranking activity that the customers actually did is that they just wanted to have a conversation. They wanted to have a pal in the car, someone to chat with.
I'm telling you, it's like a butler, Magnus. It's just someone to talk to.
But that is, of course, learnings. And now we're working on how do we then, the butler needs then, of course, not just to talk to you, but it also needs to fulfill certain activities. If that is to order at your favorite restaurant or at your next Starbucks drive-thru, or if it is to preheat your house at home, that is actually the things that we are working through right now. But the possibilities are there, and it's really fascinating to see how this is developing right now. And as I said, since we've gone live with 2.5 million of our customers, we have a lot of data and a lot of analysis coming our way.
Very cool. I'm curious how the collaborations are going with partners like Google or Sony. And when you think about shaping this customer experience, how are you approaching the partnerships?
Well, we have an analogy that we have used for a while, where we say that we are the architects of this experience, this MBUS house that we're building. And we also are the project managers, meaning that we manage the integration and the build machine to do that. But we are inviting partners to basically help us shape the rooms and fill the rooms with desirable experience and content. So first of all, what we call the local heroes are the partners that we select in order for its brand appearance in certain markets, but also because of their technical experience. So for example, when we talk about navigation, we want to make sure that the customer trusts the advice and the routes and the data that we chose. So therefore, if you're searching for something either via voice, like you and I, hey, talk about the best restaurant in town, and you realize, hey, that what time town are we talking about? Well, the town I'm in right now. The AI knows and the context and so forth, but it uses the plugin agent information from Google, because that is the best source of information when it comes to no ratings and no information in the Western part of the world. If we go to China, it's a different local hero. Here we have a local hero, AMAP. And if we go to Korea, it's a completely different local hero. It's called TMAP. And that's a perfect example of how we use these partners to plug in into the same architecture, into the same APIs, but it's a different part and different local hero. So finding the local heroes is the key items, but also being flexible enough to be able to follow the trend in the market so that we can meet the customer expectation.
What sort of challenges have you encountered along the way? I mean, what you're describing sounds complex, to put it mildly. When you're thinking about integrating third-party software into a custom-built platform like MBOS, what are the challenges and how are you approaching to resolve them?
Clearly, the challenges is, as you mentioned, complexity. Making sure that we move along and following standards. Android is a wonderful such standard that helps with the app integration to make sure that it's easier for our developers to give us their standard products. That one way. Another way that we're doing it is that we are having dedicated partners for our most important topics. So, for example, our speech interaction and our general integration with our place details, which is the location that we're in. Here we have dedicated partnerships, or key partners that we're working with. So making sure that we use standards, but at the same time, when we are trying to create something new, something really exciting, that we're partnering up with the leading players that is most likely to shape the new standards of the future.
You mentioned earlier over-the-air updates being critical for modern software. I'm curious how you're approaching scaling these seamless OTAs. How is Mercedes-Benz addressing this as a challenge? And what does it mean for me as a consumer?
That is an excellent question. Scaling over their updates and scaling software updates, we've taken an approach where it's built on the foundation that we need to change our entire infrastructure. The infrastructure at Mercedes-Benz today is being completely overhauled with what we call the end-to-end software journey. This is basically where our products that is assembled in our factories, our physical products, they are then being produced without software. They are physical products which are being assembled, but the software is then coming already in the factories then over the air. So we're using the over-the-air mechanism, the software factory, in the factories. And the same mechanisms then are being overhauled so that even when we then go to our shipping points, our dealers who are delivering the customers, that's the same procedure there, as well as the end customers and later on the dealers. So it has been a massive investment. The customer at the end of the day is going to get the benefit of that because then they have regular updates coming to their vehicles at much higher frequency than we have to have had in the past, where the customers had to in for the complete bundle update of the car, they would needed to go into to a dealer. Today, this is then for every instance of the way changed over to be an over-the-air update, and it's been a massive journey. But I'm very happy to say that that journey is now complete, and this is going to be launched now with our range of vehicles coming out here in this year.
All right, an exciting update. Thanks, Magnus. We have a live question here from Henry Joshua, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Henry asks, when competitors provide an immersive digital experience at a much lower cost, what would Mercedes-Benz say as a differentiation strategy? Are there any under-the-skin digital aspects that differentiate Mercedes?
We don't want to only differentiate with the digital aspects. We want to differentiate with the holistic experience so that you have an immersive experience with the physical environment that you're in. You're not buying a Mercedes-Benz for the sake of having absolutely the lowest cost out there. You're buying a Mercedes-Benz because it has a certain quality, because it has a certain experience and image.
And safety, perhaps.
It's the number one criteria that has been on the top of our so thank you for saying that, the safety security. So if you look at safety today, of course you have the physical safety, but the digital safety is equally important to our customers. We know that the data integrity safety, we know that the actual safety of how you are choosing to use the privacy aspects also is of high importance. But it's that complete package. It's the physical luxury combined with the digital and the physical safety that you feel along with the digital safety. But that can all, that must come with the choices and brand promise of having all of the apps, all of the features, and having a constant update of new features coming over the air. That's just the life and the reality of the world that we're living in today. It cannot be either or.
I think that question leads us really nicely into this topic of cybersecurity. When we're talking about safety, we're also thinking about risks from over-the-air updates, cybersecurity threats, or maybe something as simple as a connectivity disruption. How is Mercedes-Benz thinking about resilience in this area?
Well, it's part of the safety concept that we just talked about, making sure that security, that safety is there. So our concept is, of course, that we embed that into the fundamental architecture of MBUS. There are many ways then to build the walls around the entire ecosystem, both from a cloud platform as well as the vehicle itself. And we are the first one who got cybersecurity certified in the industry. There's others have followed after right now, which proves that we have a good walled garden around our system. But the most important is that we have a 24/7 team to really monitoring our fleet, monitoring to see if there are any attempts. Because no matter how high the walls you build around your system, the most important thing is that is anybody trying to climb over the wall? So that is the brand promise that we have. It is a system that is, of course, living up to the highest standards, but also is a brand promise to have a constant monitoring of the system so that we, if in anyone is trying to do something, we can be able to turn off that type of area for protecting our customers.
Magnus, I'm curious what level of modularity MBOS provides to accommodate future hardware advancements, but also to ensure scalability.
Hardware advancement is a fact. They will always come as long as Moore's Law continue to be valid, which is foreseen to be for at least for another 8 to 10 years, and longer if depending on who you listen to. We will need to be able to make sure that we have hardware upgradability and compatibility. So from an, as I said, the separation from hardware and software is the fundamental element that we're doing here, so that we can make sure that we carry over the functionality that we have in the system today into the future system to continue to update it. So that's in short the biggest answer. If you then go into more detailed questions on this aspect, what happens if you have a vehicle in the future that is missing, for example, a certain level of camera? What is happening if it doesn't have certain hardware capabilities? Then, of course, this is the same as when you have a mobile phone today and there comes in new features. You will always get updates for the existing features that you have, but when hits a certain hardware limitation, the new models will support the new features.
Yeah, let's talk about evolving features over time. How does MBOS contribute to long-term customer retention, especially through these updates?
Well, as I said, when you have a new customer and you have a difference between you, you're not stuck with the choices that the first owner had. You can, as a second owner, order additional digital content to the vehicle that is then being enabled with that purchase. So that really gives us the possibility to have a higher value for the vehicle over time, making sure that the residual value and the next owners being able to make their own choices.
Lara Maria Herzogenrath is asking, what is the key advantage for the driver of that in-car AI technology?
Good question. I've already made the example of the voice, so let me take another example. In the case of automated driving, we believe at Mercedes-Benz that safety is the primary goal. We need always to make sure that the driver feels safe, that they know that we have safety at sight. Looking then at autonomous driving, you've seen huge advancements in how cars are able then to basically drive you through various traffic situations in today. And we are the first ones to offer a level 3 system, which means that you can completely relax from your driving task when you're having a level 3 system from us, which means that you can do like we do now. You can have a video call on the screen in the middle, or you can watch a movie and do these things, which is exciting. However, that system took a very long time to develop. What we're now doing with the help of AI is that we're able to offer more advanced systems in the future, making sure that you can have a higher autonomy in very much more complex systems, like in the cities. So our system coming out now later this year, both in China and the US, has the capability to do autonomous driving. So we call it L2++, which is basically urban city driving. And that is such an amazing involvement, and it really is built on the capabilities here of these models coming out to be able to basically drive like a human driver, to be able to merge into traffic and help the driver merge into traffic safely, and be able to basically take them off the cognitive load. You're driving in a city that you don't know. You're driving, you don't know if you're going to be, should I be in the left lane? Should I be in the right lane? Where should I take my turn? And helping the driver with this task is something that AI definitely is helping to reduce the cognitive load and the stress of being in that situation.
Reducing the cognitive load of driving sounds really good. And as someone who's used to driving with children in the back seat, distracting sometimes, that just sounds like music to my ears. Magnus, we have another question. Abdi asks, what is the typical SOTA and FOTA firmware over the air, for those of you who don't know, updates the brand is looking to provide annually? So the typical SOTA and FOTA updates.
So two buckets, of course, new features are coming in these buckets. So customer features like improved, either if it's a driving capability for the rear axle steering, or if it's a different, better prediction on some of the charging capabilities. But so new features is one bundle. But of course, we want also to have a bundle where we improve existing features. And this improvement of existing features is then a mixture of SOTA and FOTA, because if we then have only minor updates to an app, that is something we can easily do without doing a complete release package. But improvements using our customer data, so our data monitoring to see what features are used or not used, and what are the, let's say, success fulfillment rates of our customers' feature usage is the second bucket. So yes, both new features, constant improvements, like you're used to in the consumer world.
All right, Abby, thank you for the question. And also thank you to Laura Maria and Henry earlier for your questions. We enjoy hearing what you want to know from our mobility pioneers. Magnus, as we're coming to the end of our time, I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you one final question before we let you go. You mentioned earlier that the organization changed to an E2E approach. What are the next steps on the journey of Mercedes-Benz? Is there still a transformation going on?
Absolutely. Transformation is in full swing. We need to increase our speed and efficiency when it comes to releasing products, software products quicker. So what we're doing right now is that we're having a milestone here in later this year when we're releasing our 1.0 version. But our next release is later in the year, also for our products which are in the C-class range, and the intermediate releases are equally important.
All right. I think we'll leave it there for now. Magnus Östberg, Chief Software Officer at Mercedes-Benz, thank you so much for being our guest today and walking us through the future of automotive software. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks for being here. Thank you.
And thanks to all of our viewers for joining us on this episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. We will be back next month in February with another exciting topic, speaking with another mobility pioneer who is shaping our future. Until then, thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.